National Library Workshop, March 17, 2009, podcast number 5, in room number 227.
Ready to go. Okay. Since there's a lot to cover, we may have someone else walk in, but I'd just like to introduce myself and tell you a little bit about what this next 50 minutes is going to cover. Thank you for coming. My name is Tomi Aiello. You've probably seen me at the reference desk, or I may have helped you out with one or two questions. The whole purpose of the general overview of what we're trying to do is we're trying to give you the resources and some of the skills you need when you get out there into an internship, as a summer associate, as a part-time, full-time job, any kind of job, whether it's in a firm or government agency or anywhere. You're going to be given research assignments, and very often you're not really going to have a clue about this topic. You have never heard about it before. You've never studied it in one of the classes, and if you did, it was 3 years ago. And you really don't know where to begin. And what I'm going to try to cover for you today, and you don't have to remember it all because, first of all, there'll be a podcast. Secondly, you have an outline here. Thirdly, we have a TWIN site for these top 10 research skills. And on the TWIN site, you will find, I will post these handouts, and you'll also be able to get a podcast from our website. And so you can tell your friends, they can go online and so forth. But today I wanted to do a little hands-on. I wanted to show you a few things here in person, take advantage of this. The key theme for this workshop comes directly from an article, The Top 10 Things Law Librarians Wish New Associates Would Know. And this isn't law librarians. This is the senior partners that I've seen on panels and conferences. They said exactly the same thing. What do we really wish they knew that they don't when they get in here? They should know that you should never, ever start your research with Lexis and Westlaw if you are clueless about the topic at hand. Before signing on, get acquainted with a resource that contains background on the issue, such as a horn book or a treatise. In other words, imagine in this day and age with this economy, you've been lucky enough, you have a job that you really like, you just got on with this firm, this government agency, or you're trying to impress somebody during an internship, and you're going to waste money by going right online, searching all over the place, trying to find background on something you don't really understand. It's the first time you've dealt with this. Never, ever do that. So what do you do? That's what we're going to talk about today. The first thing, if you could take your Just Ask handout, the very first thing you're going to do, let me get one for myself here, is while you're still in the office with your senior partner, your division chief, whoever it is giving you this assignment, that you're a little bit clueless about this area of law, you need to ask some questions while you're still in there. What jurisdiction are we in? Are we in a federal court or a state court, for example? Maybe it's a particular federal court. Maybe that makes a difference. Maybe you need to find that out. How much information do you really require before you get out of the office? Do you want a 25-page memo on this, or do you just want a few cases and a one-page overview? Very important. Also, don't be afraid to ask about key resources. For example, don't say, what is the Bible in this field? I forgot. We call them the Bibles, the most authoritative treatise that you can always rely on in a certain field, like copyright, for example. But you might ask, what is there a particular treatise that you like to use? Something like that. And they will go on and now tell you what they consider the most important in the field. And then you run to the library and you delve into that. You want to find out if there are any cost restraints. Does your client not want you to do much of anything online? Are there real restraints to this? And basically, any other tips? Are there experts in the firm that you should go ask about this? Are there particular documents in the brief bank right in the intranet of the firm that you can get on and use, and you don't even have to find them somewhere else? All of those things before you get out of the office. But at least know what your assignment is, what the topic is, who is your client, what court, what jurisdiction before you even leave. And if you can get what they consider a key resource in the field, that would be great. Okay, what do you do next? You really should, the first day you're anywhere, walk around whatever library they have. They may have a librarian or two, they may not. See what resources are available to you on the internet, what databases do they have, and what treatises do they have on the in the library that you can just go grab off the shelf and save them time. Because why they don't want you to start with Lexis and Westlaw when you don't know anything is because it costs money. By the hour, by the search, whatever. It costs money to be online. And especially in this day and age, no client wants you spending money you don't have to spend. That's the last thing. And they're going to judge you on how cost efficient you are, not just whether you get the right answer eventually. So this is very important. Okay, you go to your library and you're looking around for key treatises in the field. And I have given you a handout, which is key resources. I didn't name it Bibles in the Field, of course. We're not going to name it that. But that's what we call it for short. And if you look through this, you will see recommended treatises in the Dean Law Library. This would be in about any library. These are key treatises in your firm library, for example, your government agency library, court library, that you would be looking for. And two that we're going to deal with today are under intellectual property, NIMR on copyright, which is the blue set right here, and also Newberg on class actions. That's under class actions. Take a sheet like this, keep it, and go around your library and see where these things are so you can quickly get to them. That would be a good way to start. Now, how do you use these? A lot of you are not familiar with the books, and yet that's what they want you to do. They want you to get your background from a book, get a citation to a particular article, particular case, and then go online. And then you know right where to go, and you're not wasting their money. That's what they're looking for. So, let's say this is tax time, and you've been asked to do a little research on the earned income credit. Well, we sort of all heard of the earned income credit, but not to do a legal memo on it, maybe. Not to where to get started with it. Don't be fooled by this. Some of these so-called dictionaries are really more detailed, wonderful places to start. The West Tax Law Dictionary, 2009 edition. This came out in December. This even has some tax implications of the legislation that was just passed for the stimulus back in December in it. So this can be right up to date, and we're going to go, this is the, I have up on the screen, if you can follow along with me. I'll show you the books, and then we'll go through the pages. This is the first year I'm trying to do this, but I think this will be more useful than passing around all the books and having you distracted. Okay, we're going to turn to the page with the Earned Income Credit, or EIC. See also credit. Okay, we're going to keep reading. Look at that. If you don't know anything about it, isn't this a lot easier way than reading a statute or a treatise? You read this page and you get a pretty good idea. The credit is based on earned income, adjusted gross income, and so forth. And how it works and the minimum amount of income. It has increased for 2007, so this was for the 2008. It's sort of 1 year out, but it probably hasn't changed that much. And basically, look at the one above, earned income. At the end of each little article, they tell you which sections of the Internal Revenue Code you will find this in. They give you forms, publications, anything you might want to go to and read more about this earned income credit, just to get background. So this type of thing is absolutely wonderful. It might be right behind the librarian or on the shelves in a firm library or court library. Okay. That's an example of that type of source. The next type of source I want to talk about is what we call a Bible in the field, a treatise that they can that judges, that you'll find these cited in court cases as well. Judges and top attorneys find to be the most authoritative. They're usually written by top law professors and or top experienced litigators in a certain field, and they are really something to go to right away, saves you a lot of time. One of the famous ones is called Nimmer on Copyright, and if your problem is in copyright law, you can solve a lot of problems just by going to this. If you look at your list of Bibles in the field or treatises, you will see that I have noted Lexis or Westlaw in the right-hand margin if something is also on Lexis and Westlaw. But that is not the easiest. In fact, it might be the most difficult way to use a treatise like this when you don't know anything about the topic that you're researching. So we keep this behind the reserve desk up in the library, and I've taken a few volumes. There are 11 volumes in all. And as usual, the 11th or last volume, it has the index in it. Now, librarians like indexes. They're always telling you about these things, and I know you generally go online and search, just do a Google search or whatever, but the controlled vocabulary really helps in these things, meaning that once you find information on a certain topic in the index, it will lead you immediately to the correct places online. And then if this is online, you certainly could go online, find it, I'll be talking about that later, where it is, and go directly to one of the sections or something that you know is a good section to read. But you can save a lot of time by starting with the books. Okay, so you see this says index right here. I'm going to try this out. Right there, index. Okay. And then this is the first page, Nimmer on Copyright. You see it's put out by LexisNexis Publishing, so where do you guess it probably is? On Lexis, not Westlaw, right? Usually on one or the other, and it's usually on the publication, it's on the publisher's database, Lexis or Westlaw, the publisher that published the books. Now, what would you look up? This entire set of 11 volumes is on copyright. Are you going to look up copyright in the index? Not going to get very far. It's all about copyright. So you have to go, I'm going to make up an assignment to the topic that you're supposed to look. Let's say you've been asked to find very specific things in on copyright, and you've found out one way or another that this is one of the Bibles in the field or the most important treatise. Basically, your assigning partner is interested in computer programs, copyright in computer programs that someone may have developed, either with a consultant or by themselves, they've developed it. So you might look up computer programs, which is on this page. You can see that right there. And look for the word. Look for the word generally. You see where my arrow is pointing? That's a really important word to remember. You want some basic background about this topic? Go to where it says generally. And it will lead you to the volume and the page, a couple of them here, that you will go to. If you have problems using an index, ask the librarian, ask one of your colleagues, or just look up at the beginning of the top of the page. Very often it tells you. References are to volume and sections, volume and appendices, or volume and forms. So it's taking you right to the volume, the first thing. And there are 11 volumes, and on the spine you have the number of the volume. So that shouldn't be too difficult even with this one. Okay, let's move down. Now and then he's asked you for something else, your assigning partner. Basically, he's interested in computer software legislation. There were some amendments passed around 1990, and they were to the Computer Software Rental Act. And I want to see those amendments, the actual text of that legislation. Well, Nimmer has documents like legislative history, bills, acts, laws, as well as forms for contracts and general background information, all in one treatise in different volumes of it. So here, if you want to look at down at the bottom on the right-hand column, Computer Software Rental Amendments Act of 1990, just what you're looking for. And you might then want to go to the pages here, volume 2, 812, and so forth. So you found two things already, background information. And then he's interested in his client has a need of a contract, a consultant contract for computer software programs.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you. Could you just go over, like, what that is? It's volume 2, what?
Yeah. Let's go back here. Okay. Computer software amendments. Okay. Let's see. I was going to go into this next. NIMR is actually broken up. No, that's a good question. Into sections. There are analysis volumes which give you background. There are reference materials that give you laws and bills and legislative history. And there are forms. So various chapters within the forms. So your analysis okay, this is section 204B, and it's going to be in volume 1, which is an analysis. And then those are the chapters, 1 through 6A. So 2, you would open to 2 here.
That's just chapters here.
Yeah. And it gives you, and then the page, C1, there are particular parts of it, section B, section C, whatever it is. And they would either be in the analysis section or the volumes that are on, will have forms in them, or the volumes that have documents in them.
Is that reference with
Mr. No. This is a very unusual treatise. That's why I don't want to focus too much on it. Like I said, if you have trouble with this, just go to the librarian or someone else and they'll point it out. But what's wonderful about this treatise is that it has all of these things in one volume. When you get a treatise that has forms, background, analysis, and legislative history and laws all in the same book, you can do this assignment in about 5 minutes if you knew where to go. And that's what I'm trying to point out. And then if you wanted to go online and go exactly to the Lexis and maybe go to the table of contents, will be all listed out there, and go to the correct section and print it out, that would be something else you could do. Hi. You want to take one each of these? I'm just going over some important treatises in the field. It's like NIMR on copyright, for example, and why you should always begin with books to save money and get enough done there before you go online. At least you know what you're doing. So, we have found there, going from the index, then analysis, chapters 1 through 6A, and this is kept up to date. Here we go. Here's your background on computer databases and programs. You start with a historical overview. You continue on to, you know, more general. Look at all the important cases at the bottom, footnotes, cases you could start writing down if you think they're relevant to your issue, and then you could go right online and just do find the citation and get the case. And you could shepherdize it for keeping it up to date. This is kept up to date constantly through the years, like once a month or more often, this particular treatise. And I'll show you where it shows you that online, how often it's kept up to date. So in this case, you're not looking at a pocket part to fill up the last 10 years of new cases. This is really right up to date as of about a month ago, even in the books, this particular one. Current standards, source code, object code, and other code. Here we go, learning all about the background of what a computer program copyright law is about and what it copyright protects in people's computer programs that they develop. Okay. Then we go into reference materials in appendices 1 through 3 in volume 7. And in our reference materials, we have things like laws, and we go to the page that they mention in the index, and here we go. Computer software, and read under section 801, this title may be cited as the Computer Software Rental Amendments Act of 1990, exactly what your assigning partner asked you to find. You don't have to go on Lexis or Westlaw and try to find this act. It's going to take you a while, especially if you don't know the background. Here it is. It's all in Nimmeron copyright. And then they have several volumes of forms, of which volume 5 is one. And it will say form right in the index, so you know you're going to a form. So you go to the forms volume, chapter 21 through 29. And where it refers you to 27.03B, which is what the index will refer you to, this B is about consultants. Talks all about computer program consultants. And look at that, form 27.6. That's just a little introduction to the form up there. Form 27.6, consultant contractor confidentiality agreement. Exactly what your assigning partner asked you to find, because your client needs one, as well as he wants to see that act, and you need to get some general background for him. You've got all of this in one set. Look at that. That's a wonderful template of a contract specifically for computer consultants, for computer software programs and copyright. So that's a wonderful, wonderful treatise, and that's why I want to talk about that. Going on from a Bible in the field, Nimmer, we're going to take up today sort of a hypothetical that I'm going to use for the rest of the class, most of the rest of the class, and you're going to pretend now you're getting away from copyright, it's a new day, you're going in to get another assignment. And what your assignment today is going to be is your senior partner sits you down and says, we have a client, and it's going to be a employment discrimination case, and it's going to be a class action. At least we're representing the plaintiff, and it's going to, we hope it's a class action, and we want to see if our client can be a representative party for all the other members in the class. So I want you to find a little bit about the typicality requirement for class actions. Okay? Everybody clear on that? Okay. That's not far-fetched. Many of your assigning partners and judges and whoever will start just like that. And what do? You keep asking some more questions. This is related to class actions. What type of court is this going to be? Oh, this will be in a federal district court. And I won't go into New York or whether it's in South Carolina today because I want you to find general information. You have a class action case where certain named plaintiffs represent the rest of the class, like one of these big consumer suits where everybody gets hurt in the same pinto, something like that, okay? And massive amounts of money are demanded, and all of these people go into court, and they have certain plaintiffs that represent all of them. And in order to represent them, as far as the judge accepting this as a class action, you have to meet certain requirements. That plaintiff has to be representative of that entire class of plaintiffs in a particular way. And that's really what your assigning partner is asking you. Now, you may have studied some of this in a class, but just pretend it's just brand new to you today. The typicality requirement. Okay. Well, you may say, is there a particular treatise that you like to use? And that partner may say, oh, I like Newberg on class actions. We're going to get to that later. That's a Bible in the field, and it's on your list. However, there are other ways in which you can find some general information about the typicality requirement of for class actions, for a plaintiff in a class action suit. You should find out if you're representing the plaintiff or the defendant, you want to knock this out of court, or do you want to make sure your plaintiff does represent the class? It makes a huge difference when you're looking at cases. Okay, so one place you may want to look, do you remember any of these from your first first year, if any of you, I don't know, first, second years, legal research. Some of you had workshops in the library where you actually used some of these books. Oh, anybody remember that? Okay, so let's go back to the basics. American Jurisprudence is one of your general legal encyclopedias, and Corpus Juris Secundum is another. If you know nothing about typicality requirements and class actions and how they fit in with the other requirements, and you walk out of that office feeling, what am I going to do? And that's why I chose this topic. It's not an easy one. It's not one everybody just carries on the top of their head. You may want to start with one of our general legal encyclopedias, such as American Jurisprudence. And where do you go first? Always to the index. So we go to the general index, and what key terms are we going to use for our searching today? The typicality requirement in class action lawsuits for an employment discrimination case. Typicality? What else? Anybody? Class actions? Class actions, typicality, and what kind of case is it? Employment discrimination, or civil rights, maybe. Employment discrimination. Okay, so those are some of the keywords we're going to be looking for, because remember, these are general legal encyclopedias. They're not entirely on class actions. So, going into the BC volume of your index, that's what I'd be in now. I'm under class actions, as you can see, and where I'm pointing now, typicality of representative plaintiff, what word is there? Generally. Oh boy, background information. Okay? So where do we go? We go to either to parties, section 78. Now this particular one, if you remember, is broken down by topics. A to B, abandoned property to auditions, and so forth, goes through. So it's not set up like NIMR at all. This is an encyclopedia-type thing set up by topic, so they want you to go to the volume that has parties in it. There's probably no class actions, per se, so you want to go to the volume that has parties. And district courts, this index. District courts, what does this index mean? I always get that question. It means within these volumes, the index volumes to this set, go find district courts. You're in class actions now. Go find district courts. That's all that means. So, we're going to go to, we know we have to go to section 78 in the volume on parties, we know that. Look at generally about typicality. And now we want to find district courts in this index. And there we are in the D volume. District courts. Class actions. You can see it at the top here. Typicality. Generally in federal courts. Isn't that where your boss said you were going to have this case? Section 1626 in the federal courts volume. Here's the federal courts volume. Okay. So we now have a couple of places to go. American Jurisprudence, Pardon and Parole to Parties. We're in that volume. Okay. We're in section 78 now. That's where they told us to go in the index. Section 78. Under the federal rule and similar state provisions. Well, this is more general than just in federal courts, but it's going to help you understand what typicality means, which is what you want. The federal class action rule, okay, and state statutes, and you start reading, and if you look at the footnote, number one, down at the bottom of the page, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 23A3. Oh, this is governed by a federal rule. I didn't know that. Okay, that may be important. That's sort of another key term. Federal Rule 23, especially 23A, is going to be another thing to search on, maybe to find materials on, because in federal courts, it's governed by that. Now, if you want to read a little more background about what typicality means, you just keep going on to the next page. back here. The typicality requirement focuses on the interests of the class representative. The essence of typicality requirement is that the relationship between the injury to the class representatives and the conduct affecting the entire class of plaintiffs must be sufficient for the court to properly attribute a collective nature to the challenged conduct. Well, every one of these sounds a little differently, has a little different writing style, but you're going to get some key concepts to understand. Practice guide. Proof of typicality requires more than general conclusory allegations, and they may demonstrate that they must demonstrate they have the same or similar grievances as the as themselves, the other plaintiffs. So you're beginning to get the idea of what this is about. Okay, now more specifically, let's go find that reference to the district courts. Okay, now we're in the volume. The district courts, and it referred us in the index to section 1624, if you remember that. So here we are. The Federal Rule of Civil Procedure governing class actions requires, and it goes on, typicality requirement of the rule is designed to align the interests of the class. All those footnotes, cases at the bottom that you, if you think that's a good case, you can take down. Now, let's go back to our first page there of volume 32B, which happens to be Federal Courts to Federal Employers Liability. What year was that published? 2007, right? So that's not too old. But are we going to check the pocket part? Because this is 2009 and they may be new. Absolutely. So you're going to check the pocket part after you maybe find some good cases that sound right. Check the pocket part to see if anything's changed, if there are even newer cases there. Okay, so that's 1624. You've got quite a lot there. No, where there's no presumption, and it goes on. You may want to read 1625, 1626. Look at all the cases at the bottom. And you can see whether they sort of align with the problem that you're trying to work on. Okay. Our other encyclopedia for general background is Corpus Juris Secundum. Again, these are online, but can you imagine trying to fool around with this online? And I'm going to show you how that looks near the end of the class here. Okay, so Corpus Juris Secundum. Let's pretend we've gone to the index, and instead of referring us to parties or district courts, this one refers us in the index to Federal Civil Procedure, which makes sense. Remember that federal rule that this applies to? Okay. So here we are in volume 35A. The important thing is that it's got federal procedure in it. And look at this, a whole section on typicality up there in the right-hand column. Test. The test for determining whether the named plaintiffs are typical of those of the members and so forth. And then the test for determining, this is a little bit clearer, I think. It tells you a little bit what it does and doesn't focus on, like the actual facts don't have to be exactly the same. My boss fired me on the basis of racial discrimination and I was a truck driver and it happened exactly on this. The facts don't have to be exactly the same. But the theories of the case do, and the allegations and types of liability. Okay, so you're going to read about that right there, and it refers you again to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 23. In case you forgot, this is going to be important. So now you're beginning to understand it just a little bit better, and we've done our basic. Here's some more. Contrast and overlap with the other prerequisites. This one sort of gets a little mushy around the edges and overlaps a little bit with commonality and some other. There are some nice cases down there at the bottom. And you can check the pocket part for more. Here's the pocket part issued in June 2008. If that's not up to date enough, and it isn't, once you go online and you've got these cases, you can shepherdize them. And you can also see whether online is any newer. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes the version online of something is no more current than the last pocket part that was put into the book. It's a lot of people don't realize that, but that's very common. Okay. Now, here's the pocket part. Ooh, there must have been some really important cases look at all that information under typicality, 96, and all of those cases. Walmart stores, Nelson versus Walmart stores, lots of stuff on that. Other cases that are here have to do with, the typicality requirement for other types of employment discrimination. Very good cases for you. And they all came out between 2007 and 2008, middle of 2008. So that's great. Okay. Now, another source that's very important on your outline is the American Law Reports, or ALR. Some of you may have used this. This is not like an encyclopedia at all, or a dictionary, or a Bible treatise in the field. This takes experts together, and they write articles on hot topics in the law, key topics that everyone's always looking up. And if there's an article on what you want to look up, if there is, this is one of the best sources around. And, of course, I particularly chose a topic that has a wonderful article in ALR, just to show you how that works. You first go to the index, of course. Here's the ALR index. Don't go to any of the other quick indexes or guides or anything you might see on the shelf. Go directly to the index that covers ALR through ALR Fed, ALR 5th, 6th, 3rd, 4th, 2nd, all of them together in one index. And remember with this, you could be using an article that was first written in 1982, and they keep updating it. And if it were really out of date and superseded, so to speak, they would refer you in the index to another article that is later and better for your topic. So don't worry about that. Really can't go wrong. We're going to look under C. Why? Class actions? Okay. Okay. We're in the index for C in ALR. And I have to switch over now to my other one because only so much fits. Whoops. Okay. We're in the index under class actions in ALR, and I want you to look, if you go to civil rights, let's say you start with that, you might start with typicality, but if you start with civil rights, look at this. Typicality requirement of Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 23A3 as to class representative in class actions based on unlawful discrimination. Is that article on point? I think so. Okay. So that's an article in here that you'd want to read, one of the expert articles. Then if you happen to look up typicality, here we are under class actions. Typicality requirement refers you to the same article, 74 ALR Fed 42. That means volume 74 in ALR Federal, and turn to page 42. And there is your article. And if you do that, that's where your article would be. So I'm going to show you the page online. And these articles are broken down by topic, by state, cases in different states, in a wonderful way. This, notice when this, this is the title page of that volume, 1985. That means the article inside was probably written in 1985. Is that okay? Yes, because it's going to be updated. And here we are. Typicality requirement rule 23A3 of Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And look, it breaks it down for you. The scope, what does this cover? Otherwise, you should be using another article. That's not what you're researching. And look at the outline. Typicality was held established by these cases, not established in those cases. In employment practices, hiring. In employment practices, other things, and so forth. And you can go right to what you're interested in. So this is really a wonderful article. If ALR has it, and ALR is only on Westlaw, by the way, but in full text. But imagine trying to do a search is going to take you a long time. You have to muddle through a lot of these articles to get down to this one. So this is the fast way to do it. And you haven't spent a cent of your... So far, we haven't spent a cent. except the overhead to get the books in. But that's not your problem. That's not going to be billed to your client. Okay, so here's the introduction, tells what the scope, related matters. And are we going to look in the pocket part? This was a 1985 article? Yeah, I think so. I think you better. So here's the pocket part, and it has all the new cases. Oh, another one involving the Title VII, African American. We're going to run into some of the same cases we ran into in the last one. A lot of good ones here. Typicality held established on pay and benefits, not established. You can see where this is going. This is going to be great. And you can write down your citations and look them up online if you want. Print them out, whatever you need to do. Okay, now, there's also a Bible in the field of class actions. It's on your list. It's called Newberg on Class Actions. And here, you have a whole, like Nimmer, it's not set up the way Nimmer is, but like Nimmer, it has the whole world of class actions and nothing else in 11 volumes. All class actions all the time. Okay? So, what are you going to look up in the index of this one? Class actions? No. What do you want to look up here? Typicality? Maybe employment discrimination? Maybe civil rights? You have to see what word they use. Okay. So here we are in volume 11, which has the index in it. And this is Newberg on class actions. Here's your volume 11, your index. I brought three volumes with me today.
I'm sorry. Yes. In this example, were you referenced to that from the AOR now, or you just knew that?
You could have been indexed to this.
I could.
But it would. You could also start with this. If you think that you have enough general background, but you now want a little more sophisticated treatment, and or a little more detailed, he tells you a lot about, or she tells you a lot about the case, the plaintiff, all the different ins and outs, and you know right where to go, I might start with this in that case, just like you could start with Nimmer in that other assignment. You might want to go right here, but if you really don't understand what typicality is, you've never heard the term before, I might read the background I was showing you first. Okay. Now, you look up typicality. Here you go. Right here. Typicality of claims requirement. Adequate representation prerequisites for maintaining class actions. That's in general, 322. And we go on because we're looking for employment discrimination. Is there a subheading? Well, yes, there is, but it says to see employment discrimination. Where are we going to go see employment discrimination? In the same index, under employment discrimination. Okay, so let's go see that, because that's what we're really interested in. Here we go, employment discrimination. Continue. And we go down to typicality, and there it is. See section 2425, typicality of claims requirement generally, that's background in employment discrimination cases, and then there are more sections after that that we can look at. Okay, so we're going to go to the sections that they mention. It's broken down by sections here, chapters 1 through 3. So 3-something would be in chapter 3 and then section 12 within that. And these are some of the things they refer to. 313, you remember that from the index, for example? So we're going to go look at those things. Typical claims or defenses rule 23A3. There it is again, your federal rule that governs this. You think at any point we're going to go and look at the text of that federal rule and put it into our little memo just to say what we're referring to? Might be a good idea. I'll show you that, how we do that in a few minutes. Okay. Overlap with other prerequisites. This is written in a little different language, but It really gives you a lot of cases. It gives you cases specifically, you know, to employment discrimination and so forth. And would you use the pocket part? Absolutely. Only this particular volume does not have a pocket part. Oh, this one does, yeah. 2003, so you're going to have to use the pocket part. And here we are still in Newburgh on class actions. Now we're in employment discrimination. We were referred to section 2425, that's chapter 24, section 25 in the volumes, and look at more cases, and wow. Most often typicality is equated with how it overlaps with the commonality requirement. It explains that to you. And then we go to chapter 24, 2423, another thing we referred to, common questions of law or fact. You can just, there it is, typicality. This is in the pocket part now. Add to the footnote. And here are some more cases up to 2008. And you'll find, here's that same case with the African-American employees that we were looking at before. This is going to turn out to be the same case we ran into in the encyclopedias. So this is an important case. If this relates to your topic, you better write this down, get onto it online, and shepherdize it or keycite it. Okay, so you always check the pocket part, bring that up to date, almost up to date. Now, two more books left. There is a Bible of Federal Civil Procedure, too. It's on your list. It's called Wright and Miller, Federal Practice and Procedure. And we're dealing with a federal rule here, aren't we? Federal Rule 23. Wow, they've got a whole big section on Rule 23 and how it applies to class actions, because that's what Rule 23 is about. So you would look in the index to that. And you could, again, look up class actions. Here it is. And typicality is here. Typicality of class representatives. Civ, what does that mean? In the civil practice part of the set, not the criminal practice. That's all that means. In the civil practice volumes, go to sections 1759 and 1764. That's where you want to go. Okay. All this time, we found out a lot. We haven't spent a penny yet. Okay. So you go to the section, and look what it says on it. Rule 23A. That's going to save you some time. It says the sections, too, but this is Wright and Miller's Federal Practice and Procedure. It is on your list under Federal Practice, Federal Civil Practice. Civil Procedure, and not in New York, but federal. Procedure, the first one, by Charles A. Wright and Arthur Miller. It's also on Westlaw. But again, this is really fast reading here. Brings you right to the right sections for typicality. 1764, the claims or defenses of the representative must be typical. Oh boy, this is going to tell you all about it. I think some of this is more sophisticated but a little easier to read than some of the others. And again, it tells you about Rule 23A3, and that's what you're using here. That's what the basis of all this is. And it gives you cases. And it puts in bold where judges have referred to Wright and Miller. It's such an important treatise. But it includes the other good cases, too. Okay? And finally, you want to find some law review articles? You would remember the Federal Code of Civil Procedure has been put into the United States Code. Congress passed it as a law. So won't you find it somewhere in the United States Code annotated? Of course you will. So, and they have in an annotated code, not only the text of 23A3 and A2 and all of these sections that you've been reading about, but afterwards some law review articles that you might find a good one to read a little more background or to use in other research. So, if we go to Title 28, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 23 is right on the spine. And you, there it is. There is the text of Rule 23 that you might want to cite from in your little memo that you're going to do. And little historical notes and law review articles and journal commentaries. You might find a good law review article. Law reviews are not usually the best place to start if you don't have a clue about the background of your topic. But once you do, there may be one that zeroes in on your immediate problem that you now want to read. So this would be another good thing to deal with. So those are notice we haven't, and you can find case law here. You can begin your case research while you're at it. Find some case law, some more cases. And you keep seeing the same cases over and over, you figure those are very important cases. Okay. Now, whoops. When do you go online, and what do you do online? Are you all running to another class? Okay, this is six quick tips for online background secondary source research. How do you find out if a treatise is online? On Lexis, you click on the Find a Source tab. And on Westlaw, you go to the directory up in the navigation bar, and there's a little box, and you put in something like Newberg, or Nimmer, or Federal Practice and Procedure, and it'll bring down a list of the databases of those treatises, if it is on this database. And then you click on the little I link to find out how current it is. This one, would be current when I put this on in November 2007. Right now it would say November 2008 probably. But it's not going to be any newer, some of these, than the latest pocket part we have in the books, because that's what they use for updating. They're basically a book online, many of them. Legal encyclopedias, I would go to the books first, simply because, I'll show you, this is Corpus Juris Secundum, the blue one there. Look at what you get if you search typicality and class action in quotes. The one that we found does not come up right at the... You have to go through all of these. And you basically, by the time you got down to that one that was written in 1985 about your topic that we found, you would have to scroll through a lot. You'd have to do a focus search. What time you're wasting money and time online. So it's not the easiest thing to read. However, if you use the results plus, sometimes they will have a good one right there. That it will refer you to the one you want. Look at the results plus over on the right. How current is it? Is on your iLink. Okay. ALR articles, we went over, they're only on Westlaw. It's much better to find it and then go on online if you want. And I would just find by citation. You've got volume 74, page 42. Just go find it online once you've found it in the book. If you want to read it at home or you need, you want to be flexible about this. Okay. Here I tried to do a search. However, if you want to go and see where it says here, find by citation, right up here, find by citation, that's what you want to do if you already had found it in the book and you wanted to get it online. Okay. Okay, ALR articles. Law journal articles, don't usually start with them, but go into JLR if you want to search law review articles. PLI, Remember that? That's on your outline there. Those are actually where experts go to conferences and or continuing education, and they give lawyers updates. And if you can find one that's right on your topic, like the background or an overview of class actions requirements, that would be great. That would be another way to get background, especially on a very specific topic. That's the name of the database, PLI. That's all you have to put in Find a Database on Westlaw. And here's an example. Class Certification Basics. This one happened to be given in July of 2007. I limited it to the last 3 years. See what's out there in your field. And you could just search class actions, requirements, that type of thing. And you would maybe get a good background article. And last but not least, if your topic is a company, forget everything I said about books. First of all, does your law firm have some good background on companies they deal with or represent? Go there first. Otherwise, go online. And also Westlaw has some good things. Lexis has a wealth of company background information, including securities, financials, executive directories, and so forth, that you can go to. And you can go into the Securities Practice Center and click on Due Diligence, and it'll give you a whole range of company background information. That's just one source. But remember, these are expensive sources. So see what your firm has first. So those are some tips for online. Any basic, you know, things you have questions or things you want to ask? I know that's a lot, but you can see how we saved a lot of money. And that's what's going to make you look good. Any questions at all? Most of it's on your outline. And remember, the TWIN site is going to have the PowerPoint. It's going to have all the handouts and the outline. That's our TWIN site for top 10 workshops. Okay? We have another class coming in, I think. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, I think you can let them.
Are you teaching the following?
Okay. Other, I am teaching this again. Don't come to this again. But other reference librarians on the sheet right here, if you want to take one, they are, other reference librarians are teaching the other sessions. And the putting it all together one will put everything together. Not in as much detail, but how to put your research together.